You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Guidepost. We are actually in the middle of editing a more tame version of the Guidepost that will probably come out tomorrow now, but we had to hop back on for a rapid reaction because we have some pretty monumental news coming out of North Carolina in the fisheries space, fisheries management space. There has been a big win for Little Toonie. There was a rule proposed. I know many of you have already been tracking our coverage of this basically since its inception well over a year ago. And what this rule did was essentially set up management where if total catch exceeded a significant increase, 200% of recent averages, that certain trip limits would go into place to try to essentially establish a little bit of protection in the case that this fishery does rapidly expand. So when we get into the details here in a second, from a high level, what this represented was a change in mindset and fisheries management. That change focused on proactive management, recognizing that we have a good resource. It's growing in popularity. It's already popular coastwide, and especially in North Carolina, but growing in popularity and growing in value, both in socioeconomic impact and also potential commercial viability. And so with this, we are essentially seeing a shifting mindset where now we are saying we have something that is valuable, and instead of letting it hit rock bottom before we make a change to try to protect it long-term, why don't we put in some precautionary rules that protect it from ever going down to rock bottom? So that was the basis of the rulemaking, and it all came to a head today on the final vote. We are joined by our president, Tony Friedrich, who's going to hop in and give us a little bit of a breakdown here of what happened today. Because I think it was a little bit polarizing and very intriguing how the final conversation went. So Tony's going to give us a breakdown and also explain for a second here what this represents for fisheries management going forward and what is on the horizon for other states for Little Toonie, a.k.a. False Albacore. So without further ado, Tony, rapid reaction, approval of rulemaking for proactive measures for False Albacore in North Carolina. What do we think?
Well, let me, before we start, I'm just going to ask you for a little direction as our communications director. So I'm at a crossroads and we can make this very factual and celebrate the victory and celebrate North Carolina's state agency, which we're going to do anyway. But do you think, I think our listeners deserve a peek behind the curtain. And that's where I'm going to take like a left turn to Albuquerque. And
why don't we take the shit sandwich approach? Remember the old shit sandwich sales approach? So why don't we, real quick, where's the positive, right? What are we stoked on about the outlook here? And then let's peel back the curtain and see this passed on a 5-4 vote.
Yeah.
Seemed pretty unanimously, or not unanimous. It seems pretty considerate of all sectors and pretty benign in its quote unquote restriction. If said quote unquote restriction were to activate based off of that trip limit or that tripping point of 200%. So you've got something that's relatively benign and recognizes the value of resource for all sectors and where things are going. So why don't we start on the positive, and then I'd love for you to peel back the onion here, peel back the curtain and say, how the heck was this a 5-4 vote? How did we get here? Let's rip it.
So, okay. Just the facts. After all the emails that y'all have all sent in, after paying attention to all our blogs, after listening to all these podcasts, today, March 12th at around 4:45 p.m., the first regulations for False Albacore were passed on the coast by the state of North Carolina. They are the definition of guardrail. Is it what we would write down if I had a genie bottle and he asked me what my first wish was? No, but it's something, right? And we were all about, since day one, precautionary management. So basically what this is through recreational data via MRIP and, you know, commercial logs. We know how many fish are being removed from North Carolina state waters. So basically what we did was worked with the state of North Carolina, came up with a proposal that all it said was, if you go 200% over that average of the last 5 years landings, it triggers management. It doesn't shut the fishery down. It triggers commercial daily limit to like 3,000 pounds, and it triggers a recreational boat limit. There's no language in it that shuts the fishery down. There is not a tack, a total allowable catch. It basically says we're not going to let this fishery get out of control. The definition of the most basic, rudimentary, we're not going to waste a resource regulations that anyone on earth could possibly conjure up. And that is not in any way taking anything away from the effort of our friends at the North Carolina State Agency, who should be applauded, because when push comes to shove, their process is arguably harder than most states on the East Coast, their regulatory process. We've been slugging this out, I think, for a year to try to get these on the books. And, you know, by the grace of God, it just passed by a 5-4 vote. And you know, everyone should be cheering right now, because this is what we started with.
I think, am I wrong? Was this the fourth period that people submitted public comment on this topic?
My psychiatrist told me to not discuss it unless I was in their office. So it's been incredibly resource, time, resource, frustration, just all consuming for us. And, you know, Cody, I'm going to start peeling back the layers of the onion now. Okay. So sometimes in all of this stuff, none of it happens in a bubble. So this particular meeting, first of all, geographically, was in Kill Devil Hills, which is Dare County in North Carolina, which is probably the least conservation minded county in the world. Like there may be some coastal counties of China that have less conservation. Maybe some of those small Pacific islands where they use cyanide on the reefs. But like Dare County is a special place. And, you know, most of our people, you know, you're talking about like a 6-7 hour round trip to get there and home to go to a meeting that's in the middle of the afternoon. And the first meeting, you know, through no one's fault, there was a snowstorm. We had a bunch of people set up to go to that. They couldn't attend. And then no one can really make it to this one. And then here's the kick in the shorts, right? there were no less than like 6 other items on the agenda. Speckled trout, oysters, blue crabs. Blue crabs are ultimately removed from the agenda. Clams. So like everyone came out of the woodwork to make comments on this, and that kind of heavily skewed the temperature in the room on this issue. And I mean, Cody, like we have the sound bites. Somebody actually referred to North Carolina State Agency as Hitler and said that, yeah.
Was that like, was that the gentleman who's decided?
He's the gentleman who had to be removed by the declaration, removed the by Bible, the officer. Yeah.
Jesus was name dropped 3 times. This, the if apostles, anyone thinks like we're joking,
the apostles
this
fished. Is,
yeah. There was,
he did bring Hitler into it twice because he did refer to his dead family members who fought in World War II.
There's not a lot of times I'm at a loss for words. Sometimes I'm willing to admit I don't know about a certain topic, but this was one of those ones where I think I was just left it after. And so hey, look, just needless to say, if he wanted attention, He definitely won.
Especially by the law enforcement officer that had to get him out of the room. Yeah, and all of this is available for your viewing pleasure on YouTube. If you would like to see it, or you think we're joking in any manner,
and pay-per-view on ESPN Plus.
We're actually in negotiations with the state of North Carolina to put this on pay-per-view, for everyone to see. So I guess that was when, as we were listening to this hearing, that we figured out that things had the potential of going very, very far south. So, you know, on any of these state commissions, on any of these management bodies, you're going to have representatives from the commercial, representatives from the recreational, and representatives from the science community all, you know, mushed together.
As there should be, right? You 100%. Know, representatives from all perspectives.
I mean, 100%. Yes, everyone should have a voice. And that we do not disagree with that. We'll probably do a podcast later on FWC in Florida. Maybe, but we won't go down that rabbit hole yet. So, you know, we knew because of the geographic location, because of what was on the agenda, because there was a snow delay for this, that we were really behind the eight ball. Right. So, the other indicator came many, many months ago that we were behind the eight ball. And basically, one of the commissioners in North Carolina is a board member of ours. And the commercial industry filed, and this is not conjecture. I know exactly who the individual was that filed this. They filed an ethics violation. They have such hatred for conservation that in an effort to, they knew that we're better at policy. They know that we're better at turning people out. They know that the people that we do turn out are more professional, more informed, no references to Hitler or Jesus or his apostles. And I say that as someone who goes to church every weekend. I am extremely proud of that fact. I hide it from no one. But it's a little disingenuous when you invoke the gospel on a fisheries issue that's pretty standard and straightforward. But I digress. So let's get back into this. So a lot of times in these meetings, you can tell when certain groups get together and figure out they're going to come up with some way to fight against this. So it was the same thing. It's like those videos you see on social media where 20 people are saying all the same thing in the same script on the same day. And you're like, huh, that looks pretty planned. Well, this was the exact same thing. You watch four people say the same stupid shit that's completely unfounded, completely a lie. So we're going to go over a couple things. So, you know, we're a year down this, like Cody said, four meetings into it. We've been through so many comment periods. I don't even know what month it is at this point. And, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there because I'm done. You know, we're going to peel the onion back. Y'all going to get a look inside. So one of the commissioners is Sarah Gardner. And Sarah Gardner built her entire business on false albacore. And she voted against this. Not because it was bad, not because it was too restrictive, but because Sarah's really never done anything for conservation in her whole life. And it's really shocking to us when you market yourself as a conservation-minded fly fishing person, and when the fish comes up that you built your business on, you don't want any conservation. So I'm going to review some of the things, how all the, you know, the group speak that if they repeat the lie enough, that it's true and it's not. And then the other thing is, I think that you should have to take a very basic fisheries knowledge test before you're on these commissions, because it got so bad that I was almost embarrassed for the people who were talking. So we can go through like point by point, but I guess the first thing that upset me was Commissioner Gardner and some of the others said that there's no recreational data. Now, the state of North Carolina prepared a white paper that had the recreational data on it. We have MRIP data going back for Lord knows how long. And if you don't understand that there's recreational data for a fish that you're talking about in a state hearing, for a fish that you built your business on, you got no business sitting in that chair. You're not preparing for the meeting. You've allowed the commercial sector to compromise you because you were put on there as a recreational person. That doesn't mean that you vote recreational the whole way, but you shouldn't let the commercial people just say, hey, you need to say this. So there's no recreational data. That's completely false. They reiterated over and over again that they don't know any fishery where the commercial and the recreationals are lumped together. I don't know any fishery where they're not. You know, there's a TAC. There's a total allowable catch, right? A total allowable catch. And then they base the quota and our season and size limits and creel limits off to say you can't kill any more than this. Any fish that's shared, that's how the fish, you know, it's not just a commercial or not just a rec. It's a shared, both participate in it. That goes into management. So that's number one. Number two, they said there's no fisheries management plan and that they shouldn't manage on something that doesn't have a fisheries management plan. Well, with an FMP, you got to have a stock assessment. I don't know if anyone's looked around lately, but there's not a lot of money flying around for science. And we did all this work with New England Aquarium. All anyone has to do is go to our website to look at it. We've offered to share it with anyone who will look at it. Again, we know the MRIP numbers. If we did a stock assessment, it'd probably take 5 years. And then to initiate a fisheries management plan, Lord knows how long. And here's the thing. This was just a talking point. This was something they were regurgitating. All the people who said it, half of them doesn't even know what a stock assessment or fisheries management plan entails. Okay. And you could tell they were just regurgitating the same talking point to try to, you know, sway one or two votes. So here's the deal. From a state agency, if you can put regulations in that are set it and forget it, that's a lot more attractive than having a stock assessment and a fisheries management plan that you have to revisit every year or two and update. Think about it. Think about if you worked in a state agency and you said, oh man, here's a brand new fish species, a widget fish that you have to now do a stock assessment on and a fisheries management plan on, and these, and you need to do stock assessment updates every year and a benchmark every 5 years. You'd be like, oh my God, I don't have time. Or you could say, hey, here's a fishery that generates tens of millions of dollars for the state. We don't have regulations. Let's put some guardrails on it because we don't have the resources to do a stock assessment or a fisheries management plan. That's one. There's one layer of the onion. Here comes the next layer of the onion. Commissioner Gardner said that she spoke to people who commented, and they said that they didn't understand what they were commenting on. So that's directly that. Let me tell you something. In the world of bullshit, that's the Mount Everest of bullshit. Because we explained it to everyone. Yeah, Cody.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think word for word, I'm looking at a transcript of the meeting right now because we don't want to lie and, you know, put words in anyone's mouth. So let me tell you exactly. She said that people commenting, you know, they're concerned and want to protect false albacore, but they don't feel this is the right way to do so. And they think they owe it to the fishery and owe it to the stakeholders to be able to listen to the stakeholders. And one of the things that's happened in this rulemaking process, because a lot of commercial fishermen out there are not used to seeing regulations on on fish species coming through rulemaking that they actually missed out on the opportunity to comment because they didn't have an opportunity to comment. And when she said that everyone who did comment didn't understand what they were talking about, she said when she approached her friends and her coworkers, what they're really concerned about is they didn't realize that when they signed up to support this at the start, when they made comments, is that it was being handled this way, that they're being regulated in a different way. So her stance was that the people that submitted comments had no clue what they're talking about, and that there's just a lot of other people out there who disagree, who just didn't get the chance to comment. And I see a very, very, very scary, concerning gray line that we are teetering on that reminds me back of Mike Wayne's comments about striped bass the last time the striped bass board met, which is, yes, we see this public comment and that is overwhelmingly in support of conservation and in support of Motion X. But there are just a lot of other people out there who disagree with it, and they're not accounted for anywhere in public comment. But I'm just telling you that they're out there. So we should go against the people who did participate majority because and not recognize those comments because there's other people out there. Just trust me. That is really, really concerning.
Well, I
stuff,
mean, Cody, that's the next level, right? When the commercial industry files a ethics complaint and I have to spend countless hours on a phone call with the, you know, the ethics commission for the state of North Carolina, who, by the way, were very professional, very nice, very considerate, and, you know, cleared of all bullshit charges, you know, but whatever. After a thorough investigation, I guess the next step is to say, well, those comments didn't count. They didn't understand.
Well, she said word for word right after that, there are some netters, right? Right. So commercial netters who are commercially netting false albacore. A lot of the rest of the coast doesn't even know that that's going on with false albacore. You could probably talk to a lot of albacore.
How many people comment on our social media and they're like, what are you talking about? No one keeps these things.
No one even fishes for them.
They're commercially netting them in and catching them and selling them for one hell of a price right now. And maybe
I believe
we
I
didn't
saw someone call
it.
Them golden fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe
nuggets,
we didn't
gold bars.
Say it because we didn't want to draw attention to it and we wanted to win this. So maybe.
So she said there are some netters that may be coming in this afternoon who would love to speak on the subject, but they just can't be here yet because they're still on the water today. So I think we need to be cautious. What about the dozens of other professional guides who have supported this every step of the process, who didn't also have the day to take off today and 8 hours round trip, if not more, to get out to where this was held?
Oh, yeah, and nice, right? Nice so, to speak up for a commercial netter instead of your entire industry.
So who didn't speak up on the mic today and say, oh, by the way, there's actually even more people who support conservation here in this measure, but they couldn't get here as well. So, you know, you've reached the point of your back against the wall and you've lost when you just start claiming those who are here and participating, they don't count anymore because my people are out there. They're just not here. It's over. It's over. You have lost. If you got to the point where we are supposed to consider ghost votes and ghost participation over anything else. That is the point where you have distilled the conversation down from no longer focused on the topic at hand, the fisheries policy side, the science going into it. It's if you want to talk about public comment, remind you, I don't have the number right in front of me right now. I want to say it was 169 public comments about false albacore in out of maybe like 230. I'm off here by a tiny bit. I don't have it in front of me. And out of, let's say, those 169, there was one singular person against this motion. So you
happen to
roughly
be the netter.
Go figure.
Yeah.
So
shocker,
go figure.
Right?
So you've got 168 to one, and we're supposed to go by, but there's a couple netters who haven't got here yet.
So Cody, I'm going to throw this in here. Like that Massachusetts hearing was yesterday and it went very well, but we pulled the state numbers for Rhode Island and Massachusetts for bonito and albacore. And in 2024, 900,000 false albacore and Atlantic bonito were caught in Massachusetts and Rhode Island in 1 year. If you put the most basic metric on that and lowball as much as you can and say those fish were angler expenditures were $30 a piece. The reality is they're probably a couple of $100 a piece, but we'll say 30. Do quick math in your head. That's a $25 million fishery. Now, meanwhile, ASMFC says we can't manage it. It's too much for us to deal with. And they sit there and piss away countless hours on a spiny dogfish fishery that has a value of $2 million, one processing plant that keeps less than six people employed. And God forbid you manage a fishery that is worth $25 million in one state or two states in 1 year. So you take a look at this and you think about like how many are landed in North Carolina. Probably a lot. I didn't pull the numbers. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to make up numbers. I don't know. But I'm going to bet you between Bonito and Albacore, an awful lot. And I guarantee it dwarfs any other fishery. And I guarantee you when you add all the angler expenditures in, it's probably upwards of $300-$400 a fish because people are traveling to North Carolina to catch them. It is a destination fishery in North Carolina. So, you know, let's review for a second. Saying that our comments don't count and then insinuating that we misled people and people didn't understand what they were saying. Well, you have our attention now. Because that's a lie. And it's completely and utterly embarrassing that anyone would be appointed to a state fisheries management body that gets up and says there is no recreational data for a fish when the state produced a white paper with the recreational data on it. That is embarrassing, and it is an injustice to every fisherman in the state of North Carolina that someone who lacks that level of basic knowledge is given the right to vote in your name. It is beyond embarrassing. And it's all recorded on YouTube. You should have more. I'm so scrambled that I can't even find the word. You should be more responsible to the people that you represent.
Well, my main goal here is if I can turn this around quickly enough, because I want people to get the information, is I'm going to put the audio from the final discussion right after this. So anyone who's made it to this point, they're fired up or they think we're crazy or all three of those points. You will have that resource here directly following our commentary.
Okay, Cody, shit sandwich.
Back to positive.
Back to the positive. Holy shit, we did it in a state that's not known for conservation on a commission that has people that don't even know what MRIP is sitting on it. By the grace of God, we fought through ethics violations, constant attacks on social media, everyone on earth telling us we're stupid, and we have the first regulations on March 12th, about 45 minutes ago, about 4:45, and all of you should take a victory lap for this because it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. You fight through all this. We gave y'all a look kind of behind the curtain. Your voice mattered. Your emails mattered. Your time mattered. People in North Carolina who drove to the meeting, you really mattered. You know, it is, and it wasn't like some regulation that's going to save the world. It was just like literally asking for crumbs, but we got the crumbs and we all did it. So congratulations. And I tip my hat to all of you. And we couldn't have done it without you. And this is going to start a ball rolling downhill, which is going to create an avalanche, and we're going to win in Massachusetts. and we're going to win in Rhode Island. We're going to win in Connecticut, and we're going to win in New York, and we're all going to do it together.
Here we come, Florida. We'll see you soon, Florida.
And then we're going to circle up Florida, and they're going to be like, uh-oh, guess we got to do something. And that's it. Congratulations, love everyone. It. I love all y'all. You don't understand how profound this was. You don't, but it was.
It's a shift in the way things have always worked. And as we look at the state of a lot of our inshore fisheries and what my generation is inheriting and whatever the hell we'll have left to pass down to the next, it's profound because things have not worked, right? So how things have historically been done does not mean that they're the best way to do things. So hopefully, if I can figure this out here in the next couple seconds, you will have the audio from the final discussion right after this. Look out for comms from us this week. We have a local singles night going down in Boston on the North Shore right now. And then right after that, we will push through to False Albacore comments for Massachusetts management, which are due this weekend. I don't have the exact deadline in front of me right now. So more to come here. If you want it, the direct from the horse's mouth right here. Here is the audio. And without further ado, welcome to the craziness that was North Carolina False Albacore winning and a 5-4 vote for rulemaking going forward.
We got a second, and now we can have discussion. Yes.
I feel like this needs to be up to a discussion again, because we have added a number of new commissioners since this came to us. And I think that it's important to kind of reiterate the background of this, we're handling out False Albacore through a different set of rules. We're actually handling False Albacore management through rulemaking rather than an FMP process. And that is a little bit troubling to me. And and I think we need to discuss that. And I feel like that the way that this was handled through when this was sent out through rulemaking process, it gave everybody, especially the new commissioners, on the new commissioners, that this is something that we all agreed on, because all the rules were grouped together. We voted on them as a group. It went out and it looked like this is a good thing. Let's do it. My concern is that False Albacore are really important species of fish in North Carolina, not only for the recreational group, but for the charters, for the commercial industry. And I am very much concerned about them, for sure. But what really makes me nervous about this is that the opinion from the state is that their desire to have this managed hasn't changed. They don't feel like management is necessary. And the science in North Carolina dealing with False Albacore hasn't changed since we started dealing with this. Also, the regional councils feel the same way, that False Albacore are in a good position. No management is needed. And so what we're doing with in rulemaking here in North Carolina is that we're looking at, the only way that we have any information on False Albacore in North Carolina is through commercial trip tickets. So when we come up with regulation for that, it creates unbalanced regulation, because it creates an unbalanced stock assessment. We are only getting information from the commercial folks. We have no recreational data on False Albacore at all. And so we're basing rulemaking on no science in North Carolina. And the big takeaway that I've had while sitting here and listening to public comment is that people are really frustrated with slow coming data and incomplete data. And we are asking ourselves to make regulation based on no data. That scares me. And with this specific intent in reducing the ability for the commercial sector to expand in this fishery. And I feel like that doesn't sit very well with me. But we're saying that we want to regulate this for one group and potentially keep another group out of there. And I think when we go about regulating this fish with no science, it's going back to something that's become really problematic. We've heard it over and over again today in this room that people are mistrusting the science. And now we're going to say, trust us with no science. And that scares me. And I, like I said, this is a very, very important fish to me. And I did, because so many of my friends commented on this, and some of my friends and coworkers have commented on this fishery, both from North Carolina and from other states. I made a point of reading what they had to say and taking in, and it was they were very grateful for our fishery. They think it's a really special thing, and I do too. But when I approached my friends and my coworkers about this, what they were really concerned about, what they didn't realize when they signed up, when they made comments, is that the false albacore are being handled, they're being regulated in a different way. They're being regulated through rulemaking. They don't have an FMP. They don't have a stock assessment. But we're going to regulate, potentially put the onus on the commercial fishery to take the heat here. And so they were concerned about that. They didn't. They still want to protect false albacore, but they didn't feel like that was maybe the right way to go about doing this. And so I think we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to the fishery. We owe it to the stakeholders to be able to listen to the stakeholders. And I think one of the things that's happened as this has gone through the rulemaking process is because a lot of the commercial fishermen out there are not used to seeing regulation on fisheries, on fish species coming through rulemaking. And I think that they missed an opportunity to comment because they didn't have an opportunity. And actually, there are several charter boat captains, there's some netters that may be coming in this afternoon who would love to speak to this subject, who can't be in here just yet because they're still on the water today. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I think that we should be very cautious with this. I don't feel comfortable with this as a commissioner in sending this forward. That's my thoughts.
And after looking at it, my thought on it is the thing that I don't like is how the commercial and the recreational fishery are tied together. You know, if one can apparently close the other one down, you know, and I couldn't find, I looked and looked and looked, and of course I'm a dumb crabber, so, you know, I might not have just been able to find it, but I can't find anywhere else in any fishery from Alaska all the way around where the two fisheries are managed together, you know, and so if we don't have a stock assessment, the AFMFC don't say there's a problem, DMF don't say there's a problem, and the only reason I can come up with by looking at it that we're managing it together is because by managing it together, it puts the commercial sector at a disadvantage for getting shut down, because you as a charter boat captain, when it closes, you can still carry charters and you can still catch that fish and you can release that fish and you can still do it. But once it closes for that commercial sector, especially if the recreational sector closes it down, then the commercial sector cannot fish for it anymore. So, you know, if it needs to be regulated and we were going to regulate it, it needs to be regulated as two separate groups, recreation on one side, commercial on the other side. But that's just my opinion.
So, Chairman, I don't know where you get the idea of a closure from, because I don't think that is stated in this rule. The rule simply states that if you go to 200%, we put in some trip limits and bag limits. Right now, those might be linked in the language, which is a pretty tall order, 200% over recent historical landings, which I may add are fairly high compared to the long-term average. And you know, when we see the language for a commercial fishing operation, specify trip limit not to exceed 3,500 pounds. I'm not sure there's ever been a trip in North Carolina that's had 3,500, and if it is, it ain't very many. Almost all the catches are, oh, I don't have the stuff in front of me, but are under 500 pounds, and I think 2,000 was the upper limit. Now, that being said,
I don't disagree with that.
I just want to be very clear. There was no talk about commercial closures here. This is the idea of we have a very good fishery, and this is a stopgap measure to make sure that fisheries do not expand outside of our control. Now, we hear all this talk about we want a stock assessment. I would love a stock assessment. But the state doesn't have the resources for a stock assessment. And the federal government probably doesn't have the resources for a stock assessment now. Southeast Fisheries Science Center lost 17% of its staff 2 weeks ago in the first round of a reduction in force for their personnel. Now, that being said, you know, I'm glad, Commissioner Garner, you brought up some of the public comment. Though I don't know if I agree with your takeaway on that. We had overwhelming public comment on this issue. And listening to the public comment, I heard a lot of people clearly understand the process in which we were going forward with this, which was guardrails, because we don't have enough science in order to do a SOC assessment. We are years away from that. I think that was very well understood and very well stated by many of our public commenters. And, you know, I find it interesting, when we had this rule hearing, that was probably one of the most commented rules we've ever had. I mean, obviously, the mandatory reporting is a different story. That's a kind of a different point. But when we first discussed this, I also brought up another important point. We hear all this stuff. We don't want to set a precedent. We don't want to do things through rule. We do sheep's head through rule. I sat in the galley and listened to Captain Joe Shute and Anna Beckwith champion that through the end, because they knew they didn't have enough science and they felt that there needed to be regulations on that fishery. We do that through rule without stock assessment and minimal science. So when we first discussed this, I said to this commission, which was over a year ago, I said, you know, you should support this to be on the right side of history, right? And that we should support this to be a leader for a very important fishery that our fellow states don't have enough resources to fundamentally study. Now, being a leader has sparked some change up on the East Coast. And we heard it from Catherine during that presentation. Massachusetts is considering regulations, and they're going to vote for final approval here shortly. They have a process not dissimilar from this one, which has plenty of opportunity for public comment. And also, I may add, a very healthy and robust commercial fishery in that state. The regulations they're proposing are a 5 fish bag limit with a 16-inch fork limit for combined Atlantic Bonito and False Albacore. That is commercial too. 5 fish. 5. That's very different than what we're proposing here. Also, the North Carolina Marine Resources Advisory Committee, which is basically their MFC in the state, discussed this last week with minimal opposition to pursuing regulations. And I also understand Connecticut and Rhode Island are doing the same things. States understand that this is important, and states also understand that the ASMFC process has not been able to go forward with that. And if you listen to those conversations, it's not that people said that they didn't believe it should go on. It's that it may have not, they just don't necessarily have the space in their whatever. They don't have enough, resources to conduct it at the time. That was why I proposed this sort of as not a last ditch effort, but it's the best way forward to get management for a very, or perspective guardrails management for a very economically viable species. I'd be happy to discuss this at length, but I'm going to disagree with the general fact that the fishermen in general, recreational, commercial, and for hire, haven't had ample opportunity to comment on this over the last year and a half.
And my only thing I'm going to say is I still don't think it should be managed as one bulk unit. I think, you know, if you want the commercial to be 3,500 pounds, then it's separate and away from the recs. And if you want the recs to have 10 fish, it's separate and away the same way everything else is managed. That's my problem with it, is that you manage both groups as one. So, yes, sir.
First, I would like to say, as a new commissioner, I'm well aware of how this differs from the normal FMP process, and that it is a scientifically valid thing to look at trends, and we do have trend data. Now, I wasn't aware that albacore are not included in the MRIP data. Is that right? You were saying Commissioner Gardner, there's no, I'm sorry, there's no recreational data on false albacore. Is that, are they not included in the MREP data?
They are. There was, if I could just recap the timeline a little bit, around February of 2023, this was raised and a white paper was produced for this commission. That white paper contained the data available for the staff to consider, both recreationally and commercially. So that paper was given to the commission first, and then this commission said, yes, keep going, we're interested in the guardrail management. And then that morphed into the proposed rule and the fiscal analysis of that proposed rule. So that's where we've been already. And I know it's hard because we do have people that have joined the body at different times in that process.
But I mean, the management by trend, obviously isn't the gold standard. We would like to have, be able to do an FMP. One of my greatest concerns coming into this commission is the, and I've talked to the director about it a number of times, is the resources and the lack of resources that are, don't seem to be getting better with the division. And I know how hard the people that work, that they put the documents and the information together that we see, and it seems clear to me that we're not going to have, if we initiate an FMP process now, it'll be 5 years or so, won't it, before an FMP would be finalized. So, you know, in all sorts of sciences, following trends is a reasonable way to evaluate sort of a population, for example, like we are here. We do have recreational data. The MREP data arguably is better than the trip ticket data because of the data gaps within trip ticket. Trip ticket is a self-reporting, it's not a census essentially, whereas MREP is a sampling process. So, and it is arguable.
Where's the data gap in trip tickets?
Non-reporting commercial.
And you'll see when they start reporting everything that there's nothing there. Because you got people, let's just take the two guys that are sitting right here. I mean, if I eat it, if I give it to a neighbor, if I sell it, it goes on my trip ticket. If I catch it, it goes on my trip ticket. And I can tell you that 99% of the commercial fishermen are just like me. The only stuff that gets caught on a commercial trip ticket or on a commercial licensed boat is the charter boat guys with a commercial license so they can fish cobia when the recreational quota is caught, or flounder when the recreational quota is caught, because those fish do not go on a trip ticket. So it's not the commercial guys that aren't turning in their landings. It's the recreational guys that have, or they're mostly charter boat guys that have a commercial license that get to fish under that commercial quota, but don't turn it in. So nobody knows more about trip ticket program than me, because I worked through it since 1997.
And that's why I said it's arguable.
It's very arguable. And still, everything you said, I'm not saying I disagree with any of it, but why do we put commercial and recreational together?
Well, if I could just finish.
Okay.
We do have, it's the best data we're going to get from recreational is the MREP data. And it is usable data, and it is a robust and very, and it's a sophisticated sampling process. And I have a fair amount of confidence in it. So at any rate, we do have the albacore data. And I do, and it seems to me that with the sort of the shortage of resources we have and the difficulty in getting an FMP together, that managing this obviously very important sport fish and commercial fish, potentially commercial fish by trend, seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, to a few people it might be a viable commercial fish and it's not used that hard. But I still don't want it tied to the recreational fishery, to the commercial fishery. And you're right, MREP's probably the best that we've got. And it might be the best that we get even with what we're going to try to do now. But you're never going to convince me, as much as I've heard it said and as much as I've argued with a lot of people in this room and not in this room now, the trip ticket program is not the... There's nothing there that y'all think it is. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to express my opposition to being managed together in a combined landings situation. And just one example that I could come up with here is that if the recreational fishery were to grow quite significantly and the commercial fishery were to stay stable, then the recreational fishery would end up affecting the commercial fishery and could be in a negative light. And so that doesn't make and jive and make sense with me, is to allow one sector to influence the other sector. And it can happen vice, you know, either direction. And so I'm not in disagreement that the rules should have been separated and considered differently. And so anytime you have a situation to where you have combined landings, somebody's going to be affected negatively. And so it shouldn't be one being penalized for some of the other's actions, and the recreational sector shouldn't want that either. You know, and so I think it's not off the wall to believe that one day one sector could possibly influence the other negatively.
It could, and it could be the commercial sector that negatively impacts the recreational sector.
And so, fisheries management can go all kinds of ways, but
we're just doing a lot of things here that's not been done before, and you know, there's a lot of things for one fish that's not overfished. Overfishing's not occurring. Seems to be plenty of them, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't manage them some way. It's just I don't like the two tied together. Go ahead.
So first of all, this approach is really common. We're just not used to seeing it because the way we do things is the way we do things, starting with fishery management plans and going from there. But frankly, if you look at all the nearshore fish in the whole Gulf of Mexico, almost all of those are managed by those states without fishery management plans and without all this kinds of stock assessments that we go through.
But commercial and recreational are still managed separately.
Well, let me come back to that point if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. And second of all, that's true for all the freshwater fish in North Carolina, all the terrestrial mammals in North Carolina. They're all using best professional judgment on the kinds of information that's routinely available, like this. That's point one. So it's a common approach. And as a matter of fact, we have been criticized in the CCA lawsuit specifically because of our over-reliance on FMPs in order to engage effective management. That's a big piece of that, their expert witness statements in that lawsuit. Which is interesting to me. And so I lost track of where I was going. Second thing, so the major failure of fishery management in our country has been the fact that it takes so long to engage management. You know, for a crisis to develop, for a crisis to be recognized, for a crisis to be documented, for an algorithm to be performed, for a model to be produced to yield regulations at the end of the development of a process. So this approach is intended to recognize the importance of a natural resource management challenge and prevent, put in place sidebars that are way away from the current status in order to facilitate watching what happens. I'll just tell you, if this isn't on our list, there will never be a stock assessment in North Carolina. The resources aren't available. And so, in fact, all the list of other things that we ought to manage, if we have an expectation of having a peer-reviewed stock assessment before we begin the first management, will never expand beyond where we are right now. I actually don't know. The General Assembly isn't giving us the resources to do the science that's needed on what we've already got. So I think it's totally prudent for us to consider effective and justifiable approaches, including those that have been vetted in many other natural resource management contexts, to be able to take that into account. And so I'm going to vote in support of this, just so you know.
So yeah, and my only thing is I'm still not against it.
Well, let me come back to your last.
I'm not saying I'm not against doing that. I'm just saying I'm against managing the two together.
Okay, I don't think they're tied the way you think they are. Wait a minute, just a minute. May I? So the, all that happens here is that when the total load on the stock gets to a point that we are uncomfortable with because it's twice what it is now, then at that point, you say a preliminary management is needed, and it takes the form that's laid out here. And so I don't think you could create a sector-specific trip point like that. I don't know. What would it be? If it goes to twice the current commercial limit, then this proclamation happens. Or if it goes to twice the current recreational load, it goes to that, regardless of whether the overall change in total mortality, which is what we really care the most about, reaches that threshold or not. So to me, the risk isn't that high on imposition across sectors, because it's a really high bar before anything happens. And then when something happens, it's actually not that hard on either sector.
Well, it's not that hard for you to see or to worry about, because you're not sitting, and there's not many of them left, but there's a couple of them up here. You know, you're not sitting here to where every time we have one of these meetings, we take 10% of something away, we take 20% of something away, we take 5% of something away from the commercial sector. And so now the commercial fishery is not like it was when I was doing it in the 1980s, and I was grouper snapper fishing all the time, and that's all I had to do because I could keep doing that fishery. Now I crab, I oyster, I sink net, I row mullet fish, and various other things. And it's because I can't make a living doing one thing anymore. I have to keep doing a lot of things to make a living. And this may be, let's just say that it was a 3,500 pound or whatever it is on albacore. And when the trip ticket or when the recreational license started, I tried to get some data from Brandy about how many licenses were in 2007. And what I've heard, but I don't know it's a fact, that the first year there was like 250,000 licenses. Now we're up to like 1.5 million with the charter boat, head boat, group licenses. All right. From 2007 to now, it's increased by over 1.2 million licenses. All right. And so at the same time in 2007, there was about 20,000 commercial licenses. Now there's 5,000, and there's only 1,800 of them that are active. And by active, that means they have one trip ticket. And if you go down to 10 trip tickets, then you get to 500, you know. And so as one fishery is shooting up, which is great, I mean, it's absolutely great. I think it's a great thing. The other fishery is trending down. And if I was to decide to start fishing for albacore, which I'd never see that happening, I would like to know that my fishery is tied to me and the other fishermen that commercially fish, not to the recreational fish. And I'm gonna let Tom, because I've skipped him two or three times.
Willie has a question.
Thank you, Chairman.
I had a question. We were talking about this 200% threshold, and once we reach that, some things will happen. But before that, nothing happens. Okay, that's what I'm understanding. Okay, so my personal thought or question that I would have, and possible solution, is what is, I'm assuming the probability of reaching the 2% is relatively low over the next few years, at least. Would that be true? I mean, is there any thought about what the probability of reaching the 200% would, let's say, over the next 3 years would be?
So I'll make one attempt at answering your question, Commissioner Kloss, and then ask for a biologist to come save me. But the short answer is the information pulled together takes the fish harvested for a 5-year period average, sectors combined, and then doubles it. In the rule, it states if that threshold is exceeded, then and in the paper as well. We will bring information to you, and already started last August, on false albacore every year, as we do 37 other species or 36 other species, whatever the number is. That's that really big book of information we bring to you at your August meeting. It has the latest report card, if you will, on each of the managed species for North Carolina. False albacore is now in that report card. Okay, so we will bring you that update again this August. That is the mechanism used to determine if the threshold has been exceeded, if there were any anomalous conditions, is there something else to consider? And then the safeguard of the commission has to give approval at that point to act. And that action would be for a proclamation to be issued effective January 1st so that stakeholders had time to be notified and prepare that the restrictions would be put in place January 1. So there are a lot of steps in the process, as Commissioner Roller described, guardrail management. Ultimately, the decision comes back to the commission before a proclamation would be issued. So we can't predict what will happen with harvest over the next 3 years for false albacore in either sector. But if that harvest increases dramatically, there would be a tool in the toolbox, where right now there is no mechanism in place to manage false albacore in North Carolina. So I don't know if that answers your question. And if I botched it, let's get Jason Rock or one of his staff here.
Tom, because he's about to bust, and I've cut him off twice.
Catherine, thank you. That was a great explanation, and that was really what I was looking for. We've had this debate at this commission a lot, multiple times, and this is how we reached this rule, I thought by pretty good consensus, is the idea is we have this fishery that we think looks pretty good right now, and we won't have the science coming forward. In looking in the future, if we do reach this pie in the sky metric, which this, I'm kind of confused by all this concern about this tide fisheries, we looked for a cap, a number. We combined both the landings and we said 200%, maybe we'll consider it in the future. I also wanted to bring up some of the past discussions we had. This is not an anomalous idea. The Mid-Atlantic Council does this with their forage fish omnibus amendment. They have a list of, I'm going to look around. Maybe somebody knows it's 50, 60 some species that they manage very similar to this. And basically what they said in that groundbreaking amendment that was more than a decade ago was that we have all these forage fish species. And if we want to develop commercial fisheries or big recreational fisheries on them, you have to have a management plan put in place. So we're going to track the landings and cap them in their current state. Which is honestly, if you compare what we're doing here, is considerably more restrictive, a lot more restrictive than what we have proposed. Because the most important thing is a lot of the debate here was the commission wanted to have a say in anything we do looking forward, right? And so this is going to come back to us. This gives this commission the possibility to do something. It doesn't mean we have to do something. It gives us the possibility to do something and the mechanism of which to do for. I also think, like, you know, one of the couple clarifications I want to give by comments on the main on comments that were made previous to me is that this is an important commercial fishery. There's growing markets for them, and there's concern that this fishery could grow very quickly, very fast if something is not put in place. Recreationally, it's a different story. This is not a fish that people eat. Right? It's not a fish I see people eating in the future in huge numbers. It's mostly a discard fishery. It's a catch and release fishery. And the catch and release, they track abundance. When there's a lot of them, guess what? You got more discards. When there's not very many of them, not many people go fishing for them, you don't have as many discards. So the idea that this fishery can just kind of blossom out of nowhere really isn't, I don't think, I don't think that's a realistic way to look into the future of this fishery. I want to go back just to make my final comment here is that it's important that we don't lose track of the fact that this 200% was just simply a cap. It was a target.
Okay. And so my thing to you, to you gentlemen, three of y'all, is so what if there was a proposal up here right now that said, so the total allowable catch of flounder for the state of North Carolina for recreational and commercial was 350,000 pounds. So what we're going to do is we're going to open it on Monday next week, and the commercial and the recreational sector are going to battle until they get to that 500, 300,000 pounds. And then it's pretty much over with, and we manage that fishery together. How would the recreational fishery feel about that?
To that point, Chairman Corbett, I think that is a wildly inaccurate analogy for this fishery. I don't think that you can anyway compare southern flounder to this fishery. That would be like saying, okay, so if we reach 200% of southern flounder, what we're going to do is put in a 20,000 pound commercial trip limit and a 300 fish recreational limit. Because what we're proposing here as a potential guardrail is way beyond what is being caught currently.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I just would like to quickly add, I just think that when we put this cap on this, the implication here is that this is automatically a commercial issue, that it commercial harvest is what created the abundance in fish that we're seeing on fish tickets. It doesn't take into account the possibility that climate change, the change in how the Gulf Stream's moving, may be making North Carolina the epicenter of false albacore, and that we have more. It doesn't take that into account. It doesn't take into account recreational discards in this fishery. If you don't handle false albacore properly, they don't do very well. If you do, they do great. And what we're seeing is concentrated effort in areas. There's no telling on an October Sunday afternoon, how many beautiful Sunday afternoon, how many dead false albacore are sitting at the bottom of Cape Lookout Bight, because they don't float. There's no way of telling that. But I will say this, I am seeing a lot more shark interaction after a lot of heavy recreational pressure. We have no way of monitoring that. We have no way of knowing how climate change is going to affect. We're automatically saying that this could, we're shutting down the commercial fishery because we think that this is what's causing this. And I just think, because there's no data and there's no way of monitoring what's going on with recreational, I don't feel comfortable with that.
If you got something different to say, if not, we've beat this horse to death. So I'm going to give you one more time.
Just that there is, without question, we would do better with more data. If we had better data on discards, if we had better data on the population of fish, but we don't have it. We're having to adapt and do more with less. And I think this is a reasonable way to do that.
Okay. One quick comment, and then we're going to, because we got a motion and a second, we're going to vote.
It's not a cap, it's a trigger point, right? That's all we decided on. And I want to correct, you said something about closures, Commissioner Gardner. Nowhere does this say anything about closures.
And it doesn't.
Might as well be a closure.
It's not a cap. I just want to correct, there's nothing in here about closures. And I don't think that is an accurate way to describe this to the public. There's no cap. This is a trigger point to potentially put management forward.
Specific trip limit of 3,500 pounds a day in any one day trip. That's not a cap?
No.
So I can catch more than 3,500
pounds a day. That's the amount you can harvest. That's a management action, but the 200% doesn't create a cap.
3,500 pounds is a cap. That's the top.
No, that's a trip limit, just like any other trip limit. If you look at A. You know, that's a trigger point. It's not a cap. You know, is it two times this combined landings? At that point, then you start doing some preliminary management. It doesn't shut anything down, and it doesn't act as a cap. There is no cap in this.
And I still don't have any problem with any of it except not to.
Mr. Chairman, it's just, at what point do you care? Do you say that there's something worrying going on and we need to look?
I just want the commercial and rec separated, but y'all have got a motion and a second.
Okay.
So let's vote on it.
Okay.
All right.
Commissioner Bethea?
Nay.
Commissioner Blanton?
No.
Commissioner Claus? Commissioner Gardner?
Nay.
Commissioner Hobgood?
Yay.
Commissioner Rader?
Aye.
Commissioner Roller?
Aye.
Commissioner Service?
Aye.
Chairman Corbett?
No.